Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Wake up, everybody. Pulling your eyelids open. Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the podcast, Pulling Your Eyelids Open. On our newsmaker line, before we get started, I want to talk about our special guest, Dr. Hattie in Washington. She's a Washington educator, consultant, motivational speaker, author, and founder of Aunt Hattie's Place. Before we bring her up, though, I want to talk about the 45-year celebration of publishing Be There magazine. And our sponsor, thanks to our sponsor, Tori's Restaurant, 700 V Street, for the soul food of the DMV, the DMV soul food, Washington, D.C. He's been there over 30, 40 years, still there during the pandemic and still doing wonderful works. But on our newsmaker line, the one and only Dr. Hattie in Washington. Welcome aboard.
Glad to be here, Russell.
Oh, fantastic. It's an honor and a pleasure to have you on our newsmaker line. You are truly a woman of many accomplishments. I mean, you're an educator, a consultant, a motivational speaker, author of several books. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started.
Well, first of all, I'm just blessed to be here and be on your show, Russell, because you're always about doing positive things in the community. So it's always an honor to support people who are doing God's work. A little bit about myself. I was born in Norfolk. My mother died when I was 3. So I was very blessed to be reared up until I was 11 years old by a wonderful, lovely stepmother down in Prince Edward County, Virginia. After my mother died, my father married a lovely stepmother a few years later and moved us all down in the country to Meharon, Virginia. And that's where I went to elementary school up until the 5th grade. And then when they closed the schools in 1959, because of the resistance to the Brown versus the Board of Education, then my father moved the 4 of us siblings to Norfolk to stay with a relative whom I did not know and had never met until we went to stay with her in Norfolk. And then, of course, finishing high school was a struggle, being in a strange place, a strange school with strange people, and to find out that they closed my schools and didn't want us to go to school with the other kids, white kids that didn't know why. And then, of course, struggling to finish high school and college. And sort of the rest is history that I tell in my book, Driven to Succeed. So I'll just stop there
Driven
and I can go further later.
Driven to Succeed is your newest book, correct?
Driven to Succeed
Driven
is my
to
first
succeed
book.
Is your
it's my memoir.
Your first book, okay. Okay.
Yes, my first book, Driven to Succeed. Now, I have a update to the Driven to Succeed. It was first published in 2005, and then it was republished in 2015. It was republished in 2019, updated with new information and new president and that sort of thing. And so it has been translated into Spanish, which I kicked off believe it or not, year before last in Mexico, because I was requested to translate the book into Spanish because the owner of the resort there wanted to have all of his employees to get the book because they thought it was so inspiring. So they made the wherewithal for me to have it translated into Spanish, and I kicked it off in Cancun year before last.
Wonderful, wonderful. Tell us about the audio book that you just launched.
Oh, wonderful. Now, the book, the Driven to Succeed book, has been so popular and has won so many awards through the Congressional Black Caucus, the ASALA, the Association for the Study of African Americans' Life and Culture, and Amazon, one of Amazon's bestsellers, until I did the e-book last year. And then with my producer and looking at the way people are listening to music and books nowadays, I was encouraged to get the book translated into an audio book. So I did the audio book myself, the first time I've done an audio book, but we've gotten so many rave reviews of the audio book of the Driven to Succeed book, and that will be officially launched on April the 14th on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever audio books are sold. Now, right now, my pre-release discount for all of my followers and fans, they can get it for 75% discount only on my website right now. But after the 14th, it'll be on Amazon. It'll be at the regular retail price. The regular retail price will be $22.99. But right now on my website, it's only $4.99. Because I want everybody to get that book. It's so inspiring. And I have to tell you, when I was doing the audio book, the producer, BG Records, out of Maryland, was so inspired by the book themselves that the owner, you know, was very emotional. And I said, well, that's the way I wrote the book. I was telling my heart and pouring out my heart and soul into the book. And many times I had to walk away from writing the book because it was just so emotional talking about the struggles and the challenges of my life. But when I was reading the book, the producer said, no, don't stop. Just keep on reading. Even though you're emotional, keep reading it. So that's what I did. And so people who listened to the book said, wow, I got so emotional doing that part of the book. But even though it's emotional, it's still inspiring because you get the real me. And I'm reading the audio book myself rather than getting an actor or someone reading my story, because I didn't think anyone could really read my story the way I could read it. So that's the way it's come out. So anyone who wants to go on my website is www.drhnwashington.com. drhnwashington.com, and the audiobook comes up the first thing, and just click on it and use your PayPal account or your credit card, and you can get it right there and download into your phone, your iPad, or your laptop, and you'll be able to hear the audiobook. I said, while you're driving, you get to read about your being driven to success and look at the lessons learned and be able to listen to it while you're exercising, while you're walking, while you're cooking. Anything, you can just put in your earbuds and just listen to an inspiring story any time of day with a group or even by yourself.
That is superb. And what is commendable, and I want to commend you really, because to read the book yourself, that is not normally how it's done, Hattie. People do hire a professional reader or someone to read the book for you. How long did it take you to audio read your book? How many hours was that?
It's interesting. I was in the process of moving to Florida, and my producer indicated that I need 4 days. You know, I'd like for you to read no more than 4 hours a day. And I said, I don't have 4 hours. I don't have 4 days. So I can either do it in 2 days. He said, oh, I don't know if that's going to work, you know, because your voice and so on. I said, well, that's all I have is 2 days. So we start taping on a Saturday morning about 10 o'clock, and I finished about 5 o'clock on that day, and the next day I started at 10 and stopped at 8 p.m. with a few minutes break in between. And thank the Lord he had my voice to last. I had my tea and my honey and was stopping. I would drink my hot tea and eat some honey and have honey in my tea. So the Lord just had to just work that way. And he was willing to work with me. And he said, wow, you know, this, I cannot believe that you just went straight through. I said, well, look, that's the way I roll. You know, when I have something to do, I jump in with both feet. And when you're driven to do stuff, the Lord just comes in and gives you that energy and makes it happen, because he knew he wanted me to do that audio book for people who don't read or don't like to read or don't have time to read, but they do listen to music. And if you listen to this story and this memoir, The Inspirational Lessons, Divine Interventions, How I Raised My Two Daughters, one's a physician, one's an attorney, How I Raised Over 100 Foster Boys Who Were Thrown Away Kids, were not expected to do anything, but end up in jail, and have a chapter in there on how do you do that. They have a chapter on suicide and domestic violence that's in my family that I did not know until I interviewed my 90-year-old aunt about my mother. Because I was 3 when she died, so I wanted to know more about my mother, and she was telling me all the other stuff in the family that I didn't even know anything about. So anybody can relate to any chapter in the book, whether you have someone who was abused, domestic violence, or someone who committed suicide. All of these things are in my book that can relate to anybody who's reading it and to be inspired by it. If you had your schools closed, like right now, the schools are closed, been closed for a year and a half. Suppose your school was closed for 5 years, which my school was in 1959. Many of those kids never went back to school down in Farmville, Prince Edward County, Virginia, because the Virginia just refused to adhere to the Brown versus Board of Education, which said all schools should be integrated. And so because of the massive resistance, the Virginia legislators decided we're not going to integrate. So we're going to come up with a massive resistance law where we don't have to adhere to the Brown versus Board of Education. So let's close down the schools, put a lock on the schools. And my father was wise enough to say, I don't know how long this is going to last, but I know it's not going to be a short time. So we're not waiting. We're sending you all to Norfolk so you can continue with your education. And so it was just traumatic to be separated from your family and to go and stay in a strange place with strange people. But he did it for education's sake, for the purpose of education.
Well, he was ahead of his time when he saw the vision to send you to Norfolk.
Yes.
I mean, he didn't let you sit there with no education at all. Your father was an innovator, and he knew the importance of education. So he decided to send you to Norfolk. Tell us a little bit about the vision and the heart that you have to take foster boys, not foster girls, but foster boys. Boys are harder than girls to raise. What inspired you to do over 100 foster boys?
Well, my major in college was special education. So most of the special education students that I taught were boys, black boys. And they were put in special education with terms like they were emotionally disturbed, or their behavior problems, or they were severely emotionally disturbed. And I could reach these kids. I'm thinking, these kids are not emotionally disturbed. These kids are not mentally retarded. These are not bad kids, the word they put on these kids. They are bad kids. And I could reach these boys, and I'm thinking, well, gee whiz, why are they putting these kids in special ed when they were some of the brightest kids in the school? They had behavior problems. And so in those days, if you had behavior problems, there was one catchphrase, special education. And at that time, special education meant you were mentally retarded. And so they just put all these boys in special education, put a label on their mentally retarded or they emotionally disturbed. For many times, these were bright kids. So as I started teaching, and then I became the assistant superintendent of Baltimore City Schools, I would see kids on the corner in the middle of the day. And I'm from the country. We knew everybody. So I just stopped the car one day, and I saw three boys on the corner, and said, why are you out of school? And they looked at me strange and said, who are you? I said, I'm the assistant superintendent, and you're standing on my streets in the middle of the day, and you should be in one of my schools. So I'm going to ask you again, why are you out of school? And then they said, we're foster kids. And I didn't know what foster kids meant. I said, so what does that mean? He said, well, we don't have a permanent address, so we don't know what school we're supposed to attend. And I wasn't clear. Like, what? Get in the car. They looked at me strange. I said, get in the car. And so I put him in the car, and I took him back to my office. And I wanted to find out from social service, why are these kids out of school? They don't have a permanent address. Why don't you find a house for these kids? And so their attitude was like, well, who are they? And I gave them the name. Oh, yeah, well, they're runaways, you know. Every time we put them in a place, they run away, and there's a lot of paperwork. So, yeah, so we get to them, you know, whenever we get to them. That type of attitude. Well, I just couldn't understand what's the attitude. So I had a daughter away in law school, one away in medical school, and I had three empty bedrooms. So I thought I'd take them home for one night while social service found them a place for the next day. And I told them, I said, well, I have them. So when you find a place, give me a call, and, you know, you can come and pick them up. Well, that went on for weeks. No call, no call, no call. So I would bring them back to my office, and I would give them to my office is next door to a middle school, Pimlico Middle School. So I would call the principal and say, I have some boys. I want you to take them, put them in one of your best teacher's classrooms. And social service would call, and so on. But if not, call me, you know, I'll take them back home. So that went on for weeks and then never called. So I just decided to get my house licensed as a foster home and then later opened up a group home. But my heart was with foster kids, I guess because I was sort of a foster kid when my father sent us to Norfolk. He paid for us to stay with a relative, and she wasn't very nice. And we were uprooted from our family. So I could relate to foster kids being uprooted from their families and they don't know where they're going to stay and don't know why, you know, one foster home will put them out. So my heart just went out to them. And I guess that's why I decided to open a group home. Plus, by teaching special education and these black boys, most of them were black boys, they were the smartest kids, I thought, in the school. So I thought if these foster kids had a good home, had a good school, and someone who cared about them, these kids could be anything they wanted to be. So that became my ministry and my mission, in addition to having a demanding job as assistant superintendent. And then from there went on to be the vice president of Coppin State, which was very demanding. But the Lord just put it on my heart that this was my ministry and my mission to give back and to take care of these kids that were thrown away kids, particularly African-American males. So that's what, you know, he put on my heart to do. And I did that for 22 years.
That's a long time. That's a long time to be a foster parent. And you did it with not only love, but dedication, and you turned out boys that became something because of you.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, because of my team.
People in. Oh, you had a whole team.
God gave me a team of people that were handpicked. My executive director, everybody was handpicked. And then I had a wonderful board. Support board and a whole group of volunteers, which I call my village of supporters. And between all of my supporters and my staff, we just gave these boys all the love that they could muster. And as a matter of fact, my daughter, who was in law school at the time, assisted me in writing the proposal to adhere to all of the regulations. And after we opened, she ended up being the executive director for 6 years at minimum wage. And here she's finished law school, and then she's being the executive director of a nonprofit at minimum wage for 6 years. And that was just really a blessing from the Lord that she would work 24/7, 7 days a week, with these kids. He would take them to the movie, take them to church. And every time you saw my daughter, she had 4 or 5 kids. So I said to her one day, I said, "Sure, you'll never get married because every time you meet somebody, you got 4 or 5 kids." And they said, "Wow, that's a beautiful young lady, but she got 4 or 5 kids already." So she said, "Mom, I'm not worried about that. If the right person come along, the right person come along." But she spent her time with those kids, and they felt that they were an extension of my family, which they were. In fact, the first 8 boys that I took, they were in my older daughter's wedding in Norfolk. We took them down to the wedding, and they were in the wedding. So they were just really part of the family.
Well, you were close to these boys, and you had a heart for these boys, and you took your life. Well, what about your own life? Look at the dedication, your life that you dedicated to these boys. I mean, you dedicated your life. You were talking about your daughter's life and how she dedicated her life, but you did the same thing with your life. You had, your focus was these boys, which was tremendous on your part, but you still was able to accomplish things in your life. Tell us about the Maryland Women's Commission 2018 Hall of Famer inductee, and tell us how that came about.
Well, to be inducted into the Maryland Commission of Women for the Hall of Fame was just an absolute honor, and I was recommended by a dear friend that I had not known too long. I did a workshop for her. They were celebrating, I think, the 50th anniversary of the library over in Oxon Hill. So she had several authors over to be part of that. And I was invited to come. And she was so impressed with my book and the different things I had done. She nominated me for the Hall of Fame based on my work. And name is Dr. Valencia Campbell. And so she did all the paperwork and et cetera, and I was selected. And I was so honored, but I, at the same time, in getting that award, I always share awards with everybody who had a part in the rearing of these kids. I mean, to award me personally in the Hall of Fame for the success of my foster boys' home and the work I had done at Coppin State, every place God has blessed me with staff who are professional, yet there's a very thin line between your professional job and your personal commitment to the community. And so those are the type of people that made it happen for my foster boys. So I always give my award, share it with all of the people that were there. And if you had seen that room when they gave me that award, I mean, we had everybody from my church. My pastor was there. My group from the Sisters for Sisters Network under Peggy Morris. My Black Women for Positive Change with Dr. Stephanie Myers. The National Council of Negro Women. All of these organizations I'm a member of, but at the same time, these people dedicated their time and their talent and their treasure to rearing of these foster boys. So I was just honored and elated to be selected, but again, I didn't do it by myself. And, of course, I shared with all of the people who were part of the village. To raise a kid, you got to have your village of supporters, and God has blessed me with that beautiful village of supporters to help these young men. As a matter of fact, it's so funny, I had a vice president of my board who's white. She was a retired pediatrician, Dr. Lauren Garrison. And then I had another board member who's in Florida now, Laura Goodman, who spoiled the boys to death, always bringing them goodies and Halloween bags and Christmas bags and all kinds of gifts. And the boys didn't know too much about white people. They just knew about the police officers. And their thought was, "I don't like white people. You know, I don't like white people." And I said, "Why not?" "Because they want to lock you up." I said, "So you only know white people by way of the police?" Well, yeah. "Yeah, we don't know." And then they started saying, "We don't like people except Uncle Lauren." Because Uncle Lauren was the vice president of the board. They liked him. We don't like white people except Uncle Lorne and Aunt Laura. Then that part started extending out as they got used to. We don't like white people except Uncle Lorne, Aunt Laura, Uncle Jeff, Aunt Nancy, and different people that came into their life. So what I was doing was having to be exposed to different cultures so they can have a mindset that was true to the reality as to their previous experience of just police officers locking them up for no reason, locking up their relatives and locking up people who haven't done anything. And most of them got relatives in jail someplace. And many of them didn't do what it is they were accused of doing. So they just had this whole mindset about, I don't like white people. So that was interesting with that whole taste and that whole difference in their cultural exposure was really telling with many of these young people. In fact, some of my kids were white, and some of them were mixed. They weren't all African-American males, and they got along eventually. Sometimes when they first got there, they would call each other names, but then after a while, they got along. One day at school, another black kid was picking on one of my white boys, and one of my black kids told the other kid, don't pick on my brother. And the black kid said, that's not your brother. He said, it is my brother. And don't you pick on my brother. So they went on down the hall hugging with each other. And the black kid was standing there watching. Well, whoa, gee whiz, he's brother, he's white, and he's black. So they just got along beautifully. They do that today. Even today, they call each other, stay in touch with each other, and just call each other brother.
Well, you have done something what I call is not only commendable, but it is something that's in your heart. And I can hear in your voice today in 2021, it's still something that's passionate to you. But you're still parlaying what you do in motivational speaking and consulting.
Yes.
So you still have time. Tell us about the move to Florida to leave the DMV or the Washington metropolitan area and go to Florida. And now you're in Florida, but you still contact and you still stay abreast of what's happening in the DMV. You still have your church that you do online. You still have your book. Tell us how you parlay this transformation from D.C. to Florida and you still stay current. Tell us about that.
Well, I did it out of love. I have a daughter who lives in Florida, my two granddaughters in Florida. So I was on the plane almost every other week because my granddaughters are in performing arts. So they're always in the play or in the dance, this, that, and that. So I was always down here. So with the pandemic, I had not been able to see them for almost a year. And so for Thanksgiving, I decided, well, I'm coming down for Thanksgiving because my daughter here is a physician. And so she was telling me on the phone about all of the COVID patients and patients in the cafeteria and in the gift shop and patients all down the hallway and her long hours of working, and she was just exhausted. So I thought, well, I'm going to just chance to put on two masks and a shield and get on the plane and come down for Thanksgiving and be with my grandkids. But she had to work on Thanksgiving Day also. So I came down and fixed Thanksgiving dinner and, you know, just taking care of my kids and so on. And then I didn't plan to stay through Christmas, so I ended up staying through Christmas because she is just so overwhelmed. And her husband, poor Sean, he's just trying to do the girls' thing and his working full-time. And so then I ended up staying through Christmas and then I stayed to New Year's. The day before New Year's, and I said, well, I got to get back to Maryland because I got some doctor's appointments and that sort of thing. But then before I left, my son-in-law found this house because I've been looking for a house for the last 3 years since I retired from Compton State and never could find the house I wanted. You know, I wanted a pool. I wanted an enclosed pool. I wanted it on the water, and I liked the house to be open. So I just kept looking. Didn't plan to come down here in November for Thanksgiving to buy a house. But then he found this house. I went to look at it, and I loved it. I said, oh, this is the Lord is good. This is exactly what I wanted. Hadn't planned to leave Maryland, but But I knew my daughter needed me down here in Florida because of the work that she's doing, being on the front line and just dedicating her hours, like 48 hours a time at a time, in the hospital. So he just had me to come down here, move down here, and I'm down here with my grandkids, and the kids can walk to my house and ride the bicycle to my house, and just worked it out beautifully. So I say it's a favor from God, and for the sake of love and God's blessings and favor, that's the way I look at it, because if you serve him and do his work, and the kids are all, you know, Christians, and my daughter's Christian, I said, the Lord will just work it out. So that's where I am now, Jacksonville, Florida, love it, close to my grandkids, and my daughter who lives in Maryland, she's down here now, flew down for Easter, and will be here through a surgery that I got to have, which is, again, a blessing to be down here with my daughter. I wouldn't have caught this, that I needed surgery since she was so observant. And so she made an appointment for me to go to the doctor. So now I have surgery coming up in the next couple of weeks. But it's all in God's hands, and it's just the way God operates.
Well, he operates in a performance of life that you cannot ever, ever take for granted. God's blessing that come all the time. And when you
Absolutely.
Saw what God was laid out for you, you didn't question it. You did it. Because that was a big move from D.C. to Florida. And I love Jacksonville, Florida. I used to be stationed at Eglin Air Force Base, Florida.
Oh.
And I used to drive to Jacksonville on the weekends. I mean, I used to stay at a place
called
the Heart of Jacksonville. Heart of Jacksonville.
Yep,
so I'm familiar with Jacksonville, but I ain't been there in years. But I know you, the weather's good, the people there. I know it's more modern now, but that was years ago when I was there. But you have still maintained what you do.
Yes.
Isn't technology amazing today?
I tell
you. We live
you.
In a technology, internet, marketing world. And no matter where you are in the world, you can still touch people's lives. I mean, because all the things that you do, you can still do from Florida.
Absolutely. Because I was, you know, we were doing the Zooming before I left Maryland, so I still Zoom to my church. I Zoom with my Sisters for Sisters Network and all of my other Zooms I can do right here from Florida. And the only thing about it, they look in my background and see my pool and the water flowing and the water. They say, Washington, is that a virtual background or is that for real? And I say,
yeah, they always
for
ask
real.
You, are your backgrounds virtual or their actual background?
Right.
But with the technology today,
right.
You can have any kind of background that you want. You can buy one of these green screens and put them on
no,
the back of your chair.
No.
And you can
so
make
it
your
so funny. Someone to say, is that a virtual? I watch that. I see the water flowing in the background, a palm tree, and is that a virtual? Is that real? I said, no, that's my back. That's my pool. That's my palm tree on the water. They say, wow, we're going to have to come down
tree.
There for retreat. I said, come on. Not my
that's
house.
That's a good feeling to
house.
To sit in your backyard and see palm trees and water in your pool. I mean, that's a blessing for you to be in
oh,
Florida.
Oh, without a doubt.
Get up
and
in the morning and go out to your deck.
I tell all of my friends and family, when God blesses you, he doesn't bless you for you. He blesses you to share your blessings with family and friends and people who have helped you to get where you are. And so what's the good of you being successful and not sharing it with people who help you to get there? So anybody that's in my circle, anyone who's in my sphere of, let's say, of acquaintance, they are part of my story, part of helping me to get where I am. So therefore, my house is always open. You know, that's where we grew up in the country. Your house is always open for whomever. And in my book, I don't know if you had a chance to read my book, my aunt was telling me when I interviewed her that my mother always opened the house to strangers. And one day she set the table and fixed this beautiful meal for this man who's known in the community as a tramp. He goes from house to house and begs for food. And so everybody knew him, so she set the table up real good with the knife and fork and napkin and placemat and cooked this meal. And people were saying to her, why are you doing all of that for that tramp? He's just a tramp. And she said, you never know that you may be serving an angel of God. You don't judge people by the outside, because it could be an angel of God. And so always remember that, because you never know who you are serving. Like my foster boys, they have come up now. Some of them are IT specialists. One of my foster boys just got promoted. He's going to be in charge of the Rockville IT office, the headquarters. Just got promoted. He's in IT. And then the others is down here, and one is in Florida, in Orlando. He's a teacher. He told me a couple of months ago that he's been tapped as assistant principal of that school. Now, this kid came to me when he was 8 years old, in special education, on medication, graduated from Coppin with a 4.0, and on the dean's list from special education. And so just all the different stories you can tell about my foster boys. One of my foster boys I put at Cabot Hall, the private school, because they had him in the public school, and he didn't want the other kids to see him with the book, because they teased him, said, oh, you're acting white because you got a book. You read a book. The book. So they always had a book. So he didn't want his other kids to tease him, and they'd say, well, you're acting white because you're reading books. So he got in a fight one day and was suspended from school. And I remember I was the vice president of Poppin then. And I had to do a keynote speech in the Philippines. So when I was in the Philippines for my speech, I said, when I get back to Baltimore, I've got to see what I need to do about one of my boys was suspended from school, blah, blah, blah. And so I got to get him in another school. And so the president of the university came up to me, and she said, you know, we are Jesuit University here. And I said, no, I did not know that. She said, yeah, we got some connections in Maryland. I said, oh, okay. So when I got back to Maryland, the next day I get a call from the headmaster of Cabot Hall, saying that I understand you have a young man that, you know, suspended from school and you want him to be in a different school. I said, yes. I said, but that's a private school. I cannot afford that for sure. And they said, well, you know, we'd like to test him, interview him and test him. And I said, well, okay. So they did. Now, my kid was not a dumb kid because he loved to read, but he tried to act dumb when he was with his friends, because they were about nothing. So he didn't want to act intelligent because they teased him. Oh, you're acting white. So he went over to Cabot Hall, took the entrance exam, Russell, aced the exam. They admitted him to Cabot Hall, and he started excelling. I think he was one of maybe three or four black kids in whole school. He ended up being on the basketball team. He ended up being on the football team. Maintained honor roll, and I told him, I said, now you can act as white as you want, because you over there, you're about one of three kids black, so now you can act as white as you want over there. And he had to wear a suit and tie, a shirt and tie every day with the jacket. And he ended up being the captain of the basketball team, the captain of the football team, and he ended up earning a four-year scholarship to college from Cabot Hall. Now, you tell me sometimes environment, you know, the nature versus nurture. You put a kid in an environment that matches their intellect, that matches what they want to be. And he wanted to be somebody. But as long as he was with those other friends who didn't want to be anything or didn't have a vision for themselves, they were pulling him down, and he didn't want to show them that he had intellect. So he would act dumb and didn't want to read his book if he was in front of them. And so that was just another one. And just so many different stories. I had a white kid who was he's in law school now, and he recently got married. And he used to talk about me all the time. I had it this and I had it that and I had it taught as this and I had it said this. He never told his wife that I was African American. So when he had his first kid, he sent me a picture of the kid and say, I had it, this is so your grandkids and so on. He said, oh, I want you to meet my wife. He said, Lisa, come over, this I had. She said, oh, this I had you were talking about. So she said, you know, did one of these FaceTimes. So she started talking before she saw me. She said, oh, hello, you Aunt Hattie. And I know she was thinking, oh, I thought Aunt Hattie was white. And then she said to Josh, I like, you never told me who Aunt Hattie was. Because he would just say, I had it this, and I had it took us to the concert. I had it used to take us over here. I had it taught us to do this. And so he never saw the need to tell her who I was, which was so cute. Because, you know, love knows no color. But that was just interesting when she first looked at on the FaceTime and saw me, African-American, and like, oh, so you are Aunt Hattie. So I said, Josh, you never told her I was African American. He said, and no, I never thought about it. So that was her precious.
Well, that's what
you
are. You have a love and an aspiration for people. They don't look at your color. They look at the love that you pour out. Tell us a little bit about, let's switch gears a little bit, and tell us a little bit about the cookbook. Now, how'd you get involved with the cookbook?
That's interesting. In my first book, I was talking about growing up in the country, and everything we ate was from the garden, you know, fresh this and fresh that, fresh apples off the tree, everything we cooked from scratch. And I said I didn't have a candy bar until I was about 11 years old when I went to Norfolk, because if you wanted something sweet, you ate it from the tree. So I was talking about that in my first book, and several people said to me, so, okay, when are you going to write a cookbook? Because I got so hungry reading about your fried chicken and your fresh eggs and your fresh milk and butter and apple cobblers and peach cobblers. And so when are you writing a cookbook? And I said, well, I don't really plan to write a cookbook. I was just talking about all of those delicious, healthy meals that my stepmother made before organic was even known. And so many people asked me, Washington, you got to show us how to do that macaroni and cheese, or that bread pudding you were saying your stepmother used to make, or that chili. And so I've been cooking for years, whether it's for my family or for my staff at Coppin State or my foster boys. So I just decided, well, let me just start writing down some of these recipes. My problem was, though, everything we cooked in the country, we didn't measure anything. Most good cooks, you don't measure too much. You just know how much flour and how much this. So in order to write a cookbook, I had to write down the measurements. I couldn't say a dash of this and a pinch of that and a handful of that. So for the next 2 years, everything I cooked, I started measuring everything. And so I got enough recipes that I said, well, you know, let me just write these down. And that's how the cookbook started. You know, it came from a request from people who read the first book and said, I want to learn how to cook some of those delicious meals you were talking about. So this book has many of the natural ingredients, and if you can't find those natural ingredients in the store, then in the back of my book I have substitutions. Like, instead of using margarine, this is what you can use. Instead of using Crisco, you can use this, that, and the other. So it has a wonderful substitution section of the book. Because a lot of people say, I cannot find the fresh this and that. I cannot find lard, you know, for making my biscuits. Can I use Crisco? And I said, well, you can use ghee instead of, because ghee is a combination of lard and butter. And you can find it in a health food store. Lard you can find in a health food store. And they said, lard? Well, really? Yes. Lard in the 70s, people made you think that lard causes cholesterol and was a bad fat. Then they made Crisco, but that's worse. So I said, lard is something that the people use in the country. It gave flavor to biscuits and rolls and fried chicken, that is called a good fat. And strangely enough, you want to find lard now, you find it in a health food store, because everybody now knows it's a good fat. The fact is, the article in my cookbook from a professor at Hopkins and Harvard, it says 10 reasons everybody should be cooking with lard. And it talks about being a good fat. It's good for your skin, good for your hair, good for your fingernails. Good. You got to know the difference between good fat and bad fat. When it came out with the no fat, this and fat free, people started eating all that fat free stuff, and the skin started drying up. It started getting wrinkles. Your hair starts falling out because you need some fat in your body. But you need the good fat.
Well, you talked about lard. When you talk about lard, people don't know about lard. They have no idea what lard is.
No, a lot of people don't. But old people,
they have no idea. If you told someone today, a young woman, to make you some biscuits from scratch, use some lard and a sister and some, they don't know what that is. I mean, my grandmother grew up with lard. They used lard every day. I put the lard in the big iron frying pan and fried the chicken over with lard. I mean, lard was Crisco. That Crisco had a lard of his own. I mean, lard was a natural staple in a kitchen. But you use terminologies today, Addie, that people haven't heard in a long time. You use the terminology of lard. You talked about tramps. You know, nobody know what a tramp is today or a hobo. You don't hear nobody talk about.
No, they don't.
He's a tramp. I mean, those words and those, you know, hobo or lard, you have to be alive a while ago to understand what that terminology is, period. You know what I mean? So people did not take what they call lightly. People in the neighborhood did open their doors up to strangers. You could go to somebody's house and always have to eat.
If anyone came in your house in the country or in the South, they ask you, have you eaten? Are you hungry? And it's so funny, when you go up north, they don't ask you, are you hungry? They say, you want a drink? You want a drink? But in the South, people want to feed you. Have you eaten? They always had a pot of beans on the stove or some hot biscuits or something to feed people. And you nobody went hungry. You always come up and sit at the table and just feed people. But talking of lard.
Well, that's what it's all about. When down south, go ahead.
I said, my stepmother put lard. We used to put it on our face, put it on our hands, on our legs and knees, put lard on your hair. I mean, lard was so universal. You had a sore, a cut, a rash, put some lard on it. Put some lard on it.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays, you know, people don't even know the benefits of lard. But if they get my cookbook and pull that article up, 10 Reasons Everybody Ought to Be Cooking with Lard, written by a professor at Johns Hopkins and a professor at Harvard. It's like, what? Oh, my goodness. Everybody needs to see this. If you want to fry some chicken or pork chop, do not use what you call vegetable oil. That stuff you can put in your car and drive it because it's one molecule away from being petroleum.
Mm-hmm.
Crisco and margarine are one molecule away from being plastic. And there's a research article that was done I have in my back of my cookbook. They took a stick of margarine, put it in the lab where they had flies and roaches and rats, and put it in the corner. The flies didn't eat it. The rats didn't eat it. The gnats, roaches, nobody ate the margarine, and for 6 months it didn't go bad. So, but we're eating it. But the flies and roaches and the rats won't eat margarine. So that tells you that it's not even the food, and they're smarter than we are. So you read the research behind some of the food that we are eating, wonder why we got so much cancer in our country. And if you look at many of these communities where you don't have fresh vegetables and, you know, you really don't have supermarkets where you can get fresh things, you got all these little corner stores where you got processed foods and all this high potassium and sodium, that's what many of our kids eat. And the body's getting more and more unhealthy. You wonder why we got high blood pressure, why we got diabetes and that sort of thing, because we're not eating fresh vegetables and produce that you can find in the supermarkets in the suburbs and that we used to eat in the country. So my book has all of that in the back of it. So many wonderful articles in the back of my book. My book has won so many awards, not only for the recipes, but with the content in the back of the book, the research articles in the back of the book. Amazon bestseller was on 6 different categories that my cookbook won, number one bestseller in 6 different categories of my book. So it is really one of the best sellers for people who need to get that cookbook if they really want to cook some home-cooked meals that are healthy for you.
Tell us how to get your books on Amazon or your website, or give us the information to tell us where they can pick up these books today or they can order them online.
Well, you can go to my website, www.drhnwashington.com, and there's a section called Books by Dr. Washington. Or you can go directly to Amazon, you know, like amazon.com/author/DRHN Washington. It'll take you directly to my profile page on Amazon. And it has my trailer about my book, has all of the books, has different pictures on my author's page. And I would ask everybody off, Russell, if they go to my author's page, please follow me on the author's page. And if you buy the book, could you come back in about a month or so after you read the book and write a review? And one of the things you don't do enough of is write reviews. It only has to be a couple of sentences. You may call me and say, oh, I love your book, Washington. It made me think about when I grew up in the country, and I love those writers. But then put it on Amazon. Write it on Amazon as well, because you get so many different hits when you write it on Amazon, when you follow me on Amazon. And we really got to do more of that. We don't like to write about it, but you call and tell me, or you may write it on Facebook, but it doesn't count in terms of Amazon. So we'd like for everybody to start doing that to help each other. If you got a good book, let the world know it's a good book. And by the way, the proceeds from my books go to my foster boy scholarship fund at Coppin State University, because I promised them that if they finish high school, I would pay for them to go to college. So therefore, even though I have this place, it's closed per se, but we have my foster boys who's still trying to get their education, and then I open it up to any foster kids in Maryland who want to go to college. Because once foster kids get to be 18, they're dropped from social service, which means that they're going to be homeless or they're not going to be able to finish college because you're trying to make a living. So my scholarship fund pays for them to stay on campus and pays for their tuition. So anyone who buys my books, even though it's an excellent book in itself, the proceeds will go to my scholarship fund at Coppin State University. And if people want to give directly to that scholarship fund, they can go to my website. And I have a link on my website that goes directly to the scholarship fund at Coppin. And you get a letter from Coppin thanking you for your contribution that you can use for tax write-off. That's very, very important to help these foster boys to get an education, because they got to stay on campus because they're homeless. So they stay on campus, and I pay for them to stay during the holidays. And most kids come home, they don't have a home to come to. So they got to stay on campus during the holidays, during the summer. And I have it set up so that the campus will give them a little job or give them something to do so that they can make themselves useful while they're on campus year-round.
Well, you're doing a lot, and you touched upon two things that is extremely important. The contribution, which gives back to help them go to college, but the reviews, and I want to expand on that. We do have to put more reviews of what people are doing on their websites, on their Facebook page, on their Twitter account. I can't stress enough to people how important it is to follow you on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Make sure that you subscribe to the YouTube channel. Write the review on the YouTube channel. I've been doing this now 45 years of publishing, and I still have a problem with what you just stated. People leaving comments, clicking on links, following you on Facebook, following you on Twitter. I just recently went over 1,000 subscribers on YouTube, and I've been on YouTube for over 15 years. So people don't understand the importance of what you're talking about. So I want to commend you for bringing that point up. Another thing I want to tell you about that lard. My mother was like you. She used lard for everything. She even used lard to do my sister's hair with what they call an iron.
Yes.
Well, it was the iron that they put on the stove, you know, iron and comb, they used to call it. Nobody knows about those things today. Nobody knows about an iron and comb, you know, I mean, that you can do somebody's hair by using lard. Who knows about that today?
Yeah.
That's not something someone would know about. But, Hattie, I want to thank you for your awesome, awesome podcast interview. And I want to open you up to your closing statements at this time. So whatever you want to talk about as far as a closing statement, please give that to us at this time.
Well, starting April the 15th, you will be able to get what I call motivational merchandise and inspirational products with the Driven to Succeed logo on hats and T-shirts and drinking cups and phone thing, masks. I have a whole list of apparels and products on my website that people can get. You know, they say you write down your vision. Well, you can wear your vision. If you wear a hat that says Driven to Succeed, put it on the side of your exercise pants on the front, that means that you're on your way to be what God wants you to be. So you got to be driven, you got to be self-driven to succeed. So that's coming out soon. But I also want to give credence and recognition to the R.R. Moton Museum in Farmville, because April the 23rd, 2021, would be 70 years that we had, the first had the strike at the R.R. Moton High School in Farmville, Virginia, when they stood up and said, enough is enough. We don't want these dilapidated schools anymore. The roof is leaking, and we want new schools. So they went on strike, led by Barbara Johns. And as a result of that strike, they became part of the Brown versus Board of Education lawsuit with the NAACP, with Thurgood Marshall. And because of those students standing up, now we have 70 years starting this April where we are celebrating 70 years of that strike at the R.R. Moton High School. So anybody who wants to get involved can see what's happening at the Moton Museum in Farmville, Virginia. Just go to their website, www.motonmuseum.org. Make a contribution. They're doing some wonderful things to relive the history of those schools closing down there for 5 years because of resistance to the Brown versus Board of Education. And then lastly, lessons learned. In my book, there are any number of lessons learned, but if you take the word driven, I'm just going to quickly to say be driven. Be determined that you want to be all that God wants you to be. Aura, be resourceful. Always ask people. If you don't know, ask people. There are any number of resources out there that you can get. And if you don't know what to do, ask someone else who knows on your team. I for integrity. Out of everything you do, be honest, be truthful, because that's going to get you further than trying to pontificate and be false in what you're doing. V in driven is for vision. Have a vision of what God wants for you and be willing to work hard and make your dream and your vision come true. E, be enthused about your vision. Have passion. Be persistent and persevere. So have enthusiasm about it. And then N, never, never give up. And I say N is also for the new normal. Everybody said getting back to normal. No, we don't want to get back to normal because normal has not been good for us. So you want to have the new normal, so you want more opportunities, more equality, less disparity between the races. So get to the new normal where it's going to be more inclusive and you can be anything you want to be. Just be ready for the opportunity, not if it comes, when it comes. And if you keep your faith in God, God will make sure that he shows favor of you and about you and for you. Just keep your faith and you'll see the favor of God coming into your life. So that is just a little bit of my summary in terms of what God has in store. So be driven to succeed and watch my podcast. And also, if I don't have your email, send it to me so that you can be part of my village of supporters and get my monthly newsletter to know what's going on. So send me your email to ahpkids@aol.com, and then I add you to my list of supporters. So, Russell, thank you so much for having me, and I hope everyone who's listening, stay in touch, and if you need anything, just get in touch with me, either through Russell or just go to my website. My phone number and everything is on my website, www.drhnwashington.com. Get your audio book before the 13th so you can listen to my motivation, and don't wait till the 14th because then it's going up to $22.99. Get it now for $4.99 on my website. Thank you. Remember, all the proceeds are going to my Foster Boys Scholarship Fund.
I want to ring the bell. The wonderful, awesome Dr. Hattie Washington. This has been a pleasure and an honor. This is Russell Price. I'm the publisher of Be There Magazine. I'm the hardest working man in marketing, and every morning we pull your eyelids open, give it to you straight talk, no chaser. It's information that's hard to swallow, but it's good to know, and we make people, brand people, to have the life that they should have or want to have or do have. Again, see you tomorrow morning. This is Pulling Your Eyelids Open.
God bless everybody. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Russell.
You have to say, they're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in.